Okay, perfect. Well, today the title of the message is He Gives and Takes Away. You know, in Job 121 is where that's brought up. I don't know if we have a slide for that. If so, great. Did I put one in for that? Okay, perfect. So if we can go ahead and bring up that slide real quick and we can see, there we go. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall I return there. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." You know, I was reading through this next part in chapter 47. You know, it talks about the famine, you know, and I was thinking about famine. I know we've talked a lot about famine over the last few months, right? Because at different times, even within a year, we've talked about the different layers of famine that the people have faced. And I was going, you know, we've talked about no food on the shelves. We've talked about challenges that come that way. But I still don't know if we really understand what famine is like. So we'll put another layer. We put so many varied layers of what it's like. Even talking about one that's kind of close to my heart was my stepmom when she was a child up through her teen years during World War II. They wouldn't even have an egg in a month. You know, the Germans came in, they took all the meat and all the cattle out of here. Well, guess what happened to heart challenges? They dropped. Their best health ever was during that time. But when they reintroduced the cattle, guess what happened? The heart attack started happening and people started eating meats again. Even though it's allowed in the Bible, it's still not perfectly good for our bodies. You know, flat teeth, herbivore, pointed teeth, carnivore, right? Anyway, you would go to her basement and she'd have this long row of shelves. And they were pretty deep and they were packed with food. When food is away from you and you don't have access to it, you do prepare for those days. I would venture, and I don't want you to raise hands, I'd venture that most of you could not feed yourself for more than maybe 2 weeks max with the food that's on your shelves right now. You don't have a 20-year supply of food setting aside. You know, you just never know when things are going to hit. Things like North Korea, things like things that are going in Yellowstone, it's being primed right now for one of the biggest blowouts that we've ever seen in modern times. Much like Mount St. Helens, we don't know when these things are going to come about. So I think it's just wise to be prepared. We don't know when the next drought cycle is. And I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the stories my family would tell me about the Dust Bowl. You guys know have you heard of the Dust Bowl? That's when they play every year in football at the end of the year. Two teams get together and it's not that? Okay. So the Dust Bowl. Such agony came from that. They're on the heels of the Great Depression and they're going through and creating fields in prairies, right? Well, what had happened was that the wheat prices had dropped so much that when they would tried to bring their crops in, they didn't make enough money. So guess what they had to do? They had to do more and more fields. They had to continue to plow. Well, guess what? A drought came by, roots didn't take, and all those fields had no anchoring of roots from plants. Sometimes you can see when they go and take a field and when a field is turned, they turn it over. And then once it's been, they've harvested crops, they'll rotate or fold the field in, which is a horrible thing to do right away because those roots anchoring in there, even though when you turn them under, they make and create better soil. But it's a matter of when you do that. So you'll see a lot of fields that are, they've already cut the weed out, but they leave whatever the stalk and what's behind or the root system behind. They'll come back and plow that in right before they're ready to reseed and whatnot because it holds the soil steady during the wintertime and whatnot. So anyway, you have this time of that Dust Bowl where there's just no food. And I was thinking, wow, no food. What would that be like for us? I mean, the closest thing that we can probably think of is we missed a meal or we missed our drive-through or we worked through a meal. Or maybe you were that kid in school that didn't have any money. At home, there was no food on your shelf. Or maybe you're that kid that you so look forward to school because that was the only one meal you were going to get for the entire day. Do you know that there's kids like that in America today? That's a lot. Almost 20% is what I was told. You know, check the numbers, please, on that. Fact check that. And I was sitting there thinking, what it's like for a little kid to go through the line and he can't eat anything. And there's other kids that bring in their lunch bag that, you know, mom or dad or themselves made the night before, and they throw out because they want pizza or something like that. So they throw a meal away so they can have a taste bud meal, right? And I'm just like, oh my God, all the time there's a kid sitting there seeing that meal go in the trash, and maybe we'll go in the trash to get it. I know that's how I got my meals when I was homeless, would eat out of the trash. And you'd see a pack of bologna in there and have a little slime on it, and I'd just reach over and wash it off. Smell it, still smell good. All right, I got food. You know, I still to this day, you know, some of you guys will take, like, you'll have your little sliced turkey in your bag or whatever, and you start feeling the slime, and you're like, ooh, and you'll throw it out. Me, I go over and wash it. I just wash it off, and it smells good. It's still good. It hasn't got to a rancid point yet. It's just pre-rancid. I know that may be more information than you want. I'd like to give you a suggestion, though. Some of you that have disposable income, is that you call your local school and find out who's the kids that need the most food and see if you can't. You know, they have a credit card or a number that they give, and when there's money in the account, the kid can eat food and find out. I mean, their meals are only about $3. You know, and they get a pretty good. Have you ever eaten with your kid at school? I mean, it's so much fun because you can go there and eat for like $3 as an adult, you know, and get a really decent meal. I mean, I think they're decent. Not the ones that are the chicken nuggets and whatnot, but the ones that are a little more wholesome. And go charge up a kid's account with money in it, you know, so they can eat this year. Because that may be the only meal, because summer's coming. You know what happens in summertime? There's no food. There's no food. Yeah. 21% of the farmers during that time, 21% of the farmers had to have assistance of some form or another. Do you know that? 21%. 1 in 10 farms were given up. And of those, 50% of them were given up involuntarily. In other words, they were taken over. That's a lot of farms. That whole time, it lasted about 10 years. And of course, man's intervention on farming, you know, we didn't have a lot of foresight and technology and understanding a little bit more about our ecosystem or good steward of our land and what God has told us to be. We plowed that under, and that dust was there, and it ruined the farmland. Have you ever seen the black and white movie called Grapes of Wrath with I think Jimmy Stewart's in it? If you haven't seen that in a while, I think you can watch it on YouTube for free. Go check it out. It gives a pretty good insight. They needed help. They were in bad, bad shape. The farmers in their day were given about $1 billion. $1 billion. That's a lot of coin. That's a lot of money that was handed out. But if you take that 1930s money and you put it in 2017 terms, that increase would be around 1,366%. Is that up there? I don't know. We may or may have. Yeah, there it is. Roughly 1,366 times that amount. Today money, that'd be 14,657,844,311,377. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. $1 trillion, you could put a dollar bills end to end and circle the world 4,000 times to get $1 trillion. You could have, for $1 trillion, spend $54 million a day, every day of your life, and never get through it all and have money to give to your grandkids that far out. $54 million a day. Could you spend $54 million in a day? Okay, how about tomorrow? How about the next day? 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 I mean, we're talking a lot of coins here. A satellite runs 650 miles in the sky. If you stack bills on top of one another, they would go 60,700 miles in the sky. That's a lot of 10,000 18-wheelers to haul $1 trillion. That's just a lot of money. If you do a stack of $1,000 bills, a 4-inch stack, you'd be a millionaire. A millionaire at 4 inches. Of 1,000. 67-mile stack would be $1 trillion. Have you got that? You starting to understand what a trillion? Give you $1 million a day from Christ's birth till now, and you still wouldn't hit a trillion. That's a lot of money. What does that have to do with us? Many things. It's a ton of cash. Today, to give you a perspective, our national debt today is $20,347,802,336,478. And that data is as of October the 2nd. To give you some perspective to pay that debt, each person individually would have to pay $62,418, or your household would have to pay $161,723. It's about 106% of your GDP, gross domestic product, or 567% of our annual revenues. That's almost six times our annual revenues.
And the majority is that's
our debt. Mm-hmm. Right now we're spending 55 or 56% of our budget on that. So that's just our debt. Then there's this thing that's called our unfunded liability. That's ghost money. There's no backing for it. For many of you, if you cashed out of your house today, you could pay all your debts if you're not debt-free. Some of you would have liquidity. Some of you would sell your house and still owe debt. Some of you have funding that backs your debt currently. Does this make sense so far? Well, $84.3 trillion is what we have in unfunded liability. That comes at $29 trillion to Social Security, $33.7 trillion goes to Medicare, and $8.3 trillion goes to pension plans and accounts payable and environmental disposal costs. A trillion will have, I have a mismark here, we need to get rid of one zero. They have 12 entries before the number on the trillion. Isn't that a lot? That's a hefty sum. To pay that off, this is unfunded now. These are promises to pay. You understand, listen, you understand that your dollar bill says U.S. note, right? So that's backed by the U.S. Treasury, right? And the Treasury is a note. We're not on gold standard anymore that supports that Treasury note. So every dollar is a promise to a U.S. Treasury, which is a promise to a question mark. And that question mark is, put your face in the midst of that. To pay off that other debt per person is $260,382 per person. Per household is $670,058. Isn't that amazing? That's what you owe. Because you're an American citizen. Isn't that crazy numbers? So, huh? Well, no, that's what we have to pay off to secure what we said is okay, so that these people can get what they deserve. Some of you are getting Social Security or soon to get it. Do you understand? It's money. It's hard for us to get this understanding of famine. So we have to look at dollars. Here, try one other. When a baby is born today, we say, welcome to the world. Guess what you owe? $322,800 at birth. So that little baby you're hearing in the background there, and the little babies that are going to come in, each one of them going, welcome to the world, Daddy, Mommy loves you, here's your bill. And even if they paid that bill right from the start, they'd still be taxed because others don't. Because your household owes $600,000 each. Would you loan to somebody that owns that kind of debt? Honestly, would you loan to somebody? Why do people loan to us? By the grace of God, I guess. You know, we loaned people, we saw this challenge in the 30s because we don't understand debt challenge, but we also saw it in 2006 in Denver, 2008 nationwide, which was the Great Recession. They were loaning money to people that had no business getting loans, And by the way, once the people said it's okay to get loans, then if you told them you can't afford this house, they just go right down the street. So everybody that was in the business, whether it was client or professional, has their foot in the mud on this. We want to blame it on the big banks. We want to blame it on XYZ, but the greed of the American people also fall heavily into that. Heavily into that. And it's our sin depth. JustFacts.com was where those numbers came from, for what it's worth. We can't understand money well. The last time prices were that low and lending money was this low in 2006 and 2008, the very first call on a landline from the Atlantic to the Pacific happened. The last time money was that low and lending was that low, price of houses to lending was that low, was MacArthur was coming back from Japan, or I Love Lucy was running in first syndication, first live. Live in the sense of it hadn't been a rerun. That's pretty crazy. And I sit there and I think, that's what famine looks like. That's what famine looks like. Does that cause you harm to look at some of those things? Those numbers? 83 trillion, if you could correct that number, by the way, and subtract 10, I'd appreciate that. You see it something like that, that's crazy deep money. And no way should we be spending at that rate. We basically need to cut out the government and wait 30 years. You know? What we're reading today is a similar tone. Similar in the sense that Egypt was a very wealthy state, wealthiest of them all. But money didn't work. After a period of time, you understand that money won't work soon. It just won't work. You walk in with your cash and it feels good and you've known it to hold value, but you have nothing to secure that money with except banks in good measure. You can take any dollar of a country that's gone defunct and try to bring the money in for trade. It doesn't work, right? You understand what happened to India. They wiped out the equivalent of like $1,000 bills or something like that. The banks wanted to get people off of cash and getting them into credit so that they can make more money off of that as well. What we're reading today carries a similar tone. And it was a tough time. God gave Pharaoh dreams about that time. And you know he was disturbed by it, right? Because he was like, what are these dreams that are in my head? These dreams of these plump cows, you know, seven, and then there's these other like rancid, skinny looking gaunt cattle eating the whole cow. What's that all about? And then the flower head doing the same, the seated head. What is up with that? God gave warning. He gave warning, right? Go to 41 Genesis. There's one piece in here that that really stuck out. He showed Pharaoh what was going to happen. But in 32, and the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will bring it to pass. This was the dream was established by God, but the outcome was established by God. He was telling them what to do. And then we know the story, Joseph, they said, take a fifth, set it aside during the 7 years to help through the times of woe and challenge. How would you like to have that dream? Can you see that cow? Why did they eat the fatted cow? Why did they eat that? That was the time of great growth. Do you understand when all money is gone, everything is gone? All the time of wonder and plenty of the roaring 20s gave way to the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression, right? They have nothing. Do you understand that 20-25% of Detroit had nobody living in it? 1/4 of the entire city of Detroit during our time, 2006 and 2008? That's a lot of people. That's just a lot of people, guys. And here he has this famine. Let's go ahead and read into 47. And then it'll be 47 and 13. The title on this chapter is Joseph deals with the famine. Father, your word, please. Now there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very severe. Now go back to the Dust Bowl. There is no bread in chapter 47 of 13. 13 of 47. There's no bread. You guys, you can go to a shelf anywhere and get bread. You can get tortillas. You can get masa and make grains, you know. But no, nothing there at all. There's no bread. Where are you going to go? And this happened in Canaan, and it happened in Egypt. It was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. No trade, no food, no what's going on, right? This is a tough time. And Joseph is the one dealing with these times. He's had the vision. He's seen the time of good. He's brought his dad back from a rough patch to a rough patch. 14, and Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which was bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. There was no money left. Everything that was available to them is now in the storehouse. Let me ask you a question. When the people don't have the ability to create commerce, is money of value? No. Because if you have all the money and it's not gold, or silver or precious metals of some sort, or rubies or diamonds, which still are just nothing but rocks, refined or raw, right? They're rocks. But a diamond only has a value because we put value on diamonds. Do you understand? If you put value on sheepskin, then that's going to be the most expensive thing in the world because there's a value behind it. But when all the money is in, go try to cash in a Confederate dollar. I guess that's the closest thing we can understand to a separated country divided and fallen in this, thank God, fallen in this era, right? Go get a Confederate dollar. Oh, you'll get some posterity's sake, you know. Gathered up all the money in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the grain which was bought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. 15. So when the money, what does your rendition say? Failed. Do you understand why it's important to have yourself backed up? You need to have precious coins, precious metals. I have a buddy who saves alcohol bottles. I'm not condoning that. But when times are hard and people are sad, that'll be worth some type of trade in food, you know. But something that has a tenderable quality beyond a U.S. paper/fiber note. I'm not picking on the economy. I'm not picking on the U.S. People are still kicking down the walls to come in here. They want to be in the United States of America, and I don't blame them. We have amazing freedom. But with freedom comes what? Responsibility. Give us bread. Money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan. All the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us bread, for why should we die in your presence? For the money has failed." We can't buy anything. Try this. Your credit card stopped. You can't pay anything. The pink bills still keep coming in. They keep coming in, then they turn pink, right? So you're trying to go to the bank account. You put in the ATM, failed. Have you guys ever had a card that failed because of maybe the PIN was bad or something? What's that feel like? Now imagine that across the spectrum. You can't buy food. Money has failed. I'm not being an alarmist here. I'm just saying that every economy will have ups and downs. Every economy will fail at one time or another. Give us bread. Why should we die in your presence? For the money has failed. 16. Then Joseph said, "Give your livestock, and I will give you bread for your livestock if the money is gone." Okay, you know what that's called? Pardon? Trade. And what's another name? Begins with a B. Barter. It's the barter system is now involved. Money failed, barter is next. You have water? I have grain. No, I have too much grain. What else do you need? I need a small child. Or your child dies. And the trade may happen. I'm being extreme here, but you need to understand what's going on right here. They're not saying that children are being traded, but livestock is. You know, many people, when they're on tough times, will give their kids over to an uncle or an aunt because they can't afford them and they want them having a better life than they possibly could have had. This is not unusual in America. Heck, we kill 52 million kids. What value of life do we show? The livestock. You understand, at least they had livestock to secure their food for a year. Here's the livestock, here's the grain. If you don't feed the cattle grain and you have no grain to feed them and they're going to die, they're valuable now. Even a skinny cow's worth something because you take it over, somebody's got grain, they're going to fatten them up and sell it back to you. Well, what if money's failed and the barter system failed? What's next? You. You are the last line of barter. Do you understand that? You are the last line of barter. Tell the Egyptians that held the Israelis in bondage for 400 years. Northeast Africa. Give us your livestock in 16, and I will give you bread for your livestock if the money is gone. So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for their horses, flocks, cattle of herds, and for the donkeys. Thus he fed them with bread in exchange for their livestock that year. You understand what's happened during this cattle skinny and cattle thick is 14 years, right? We still have another year. In 18, when that year had ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, "We will not hide from my Lord that our money is gone. My Lord also has herds of livestock. There is nothing left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our land." You understand they're trading heavily now. They've given up their life. There's nothing there. So they've given up legal tender or liquidity. They've given up livestock. They've given up land. And now they're giving up life. And all is a loss in a sense. Who wins in this? They do. Pharaoh wins, Joseph wins, the people win. How's that a win? They've lost everything. They're not dead. They're still able to carry and tarry on and trudge through it until they can get solvent again. Do you understand? You're working for somebody. You're an indentured servant, in a sense. You're working for hire. If you were self-employed, you would not have somebody except your scheduler as your boss. Does that make sense? We already work for somebody. And if you lose it all, you would go up to somebody and says, "Can I please have a job? Do you have a place I can stay?" And they would pay you less because you got to live on their ranch or their farm or their bedroom, one of their rooms extra. Because in 06 and 08, there were a lot of families living together. We had three generations in our household living with us, complex generations, meaning they came from different family heads. Three and four generations, minimum two. Are you kind of seeing this? Are you kind of getting an understanding of it? Again, 18, when that year had ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, "We will not hide from my Lord that our money is gone. My Lord, also that our herds of livestock are gone. There is nothing left in sight of my Lord but our bodies and our lands." A man ain't no kind of man unless he got land. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? See, they're weighing this. You know, have you ever had that thing where you're like, okay, I got to make this car payment, and you're, you know, rubbing the furrowed nature of your brow, getting those worry lines out of there. All right, so we can just let the car go back. They can have the car, and we'll deal with the fallout later. You have to make decisions in life. Many of our decisions in America is because we have such excess and we buy into, oh, I got a credit card. I got a new credit card, and here we go. That's another diatribe for another day. But our land and our bodies. 19. Why should we die before our eyes, both we and our land? Buy us. That's trade. And our land for bread. And we and our land will be as servants to Pharaoh. Give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land may not be desolate. Do you know the term sharecropping? You are now a tenant farmer. Maybe you know it that way. The land that you owned is no longer yours. It now belongs to the government, the bank, in this case, Pharaoh. And you get to work that land. You still get to work in the field that you've done, but it's no longer yours. And those crops are not yours until 20% is paid up front. And then the rest of the 80% is yours. Then Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. Who is the number one landowner in Egypt? Pharaoh. For every man of Egyptian sold his field because the famine was severe upon them. So the land became Pharaoh's, and as for the people, he moved them into the cities from one end of the borders to the Egypt to the other end. The only land of the priest he did not buy, for the priest had rations allotted to them by Pharaoh, and they ate their rations which Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their lands. Then Joseph said to the people, "Indeed, I have bought you and your land this day for Pharaoh. Look, here's the seed in trade." Do you understand what they've traded? Land themselves for seed. The seed represents opportunity. If a drought continues, that seed will burn in the ground and not yield. This is gambling to the full degree, but they had no choice. In 24, and you shall sow it. In 24, and it shall come to pass in the harvest, you shall give 1/5 to Pharaoh, 4/5 shall be your own as seed for your field and for your food for those of your households and as food for your little ones. So they said, "You have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servant." This is a willful act. And Joseph made law over the land of Egypt to this day that Pharaoh should have 1/5 except for the land of the priests of which only which did not become Pharaoh's. That 20% kind of sounds like our tax system today, right? See, our taxes, but we're broke as a country. We're as broke as these people selling their land and seed. You understand, if the country stays broke, it can only get broker because it's broken as far as financial sin. Everybody wants something for nothing. Well, you can just take it from the rich. That's not going to account for much. They already pay 98% of all the taxes. 2% is filtered by the rest of us. So where are you going to get your money? You either got to produce more or you got to cut more, or you go broke. If we go broke and people come in, you understand it's no longer Old Glory. You're going to be carrying the sickle in the red fan that's got the sickle and the whatever the USSR used to be, or China. England, Dutch, Japan, and China own our greatest debt. It's amazing a country as small as the Dutch can lend to us. That tax system, that 20%, did you notice how simple that was? If you had a little farm and you had a little amount, you paid 20%. If you had a big farm and you had a lot of amount, you paid 20%. Don't care who you were, you paid 20%. It's called a flat tax. I'm not promoting flat taxes. I'm just showing you what's in the word here. They've already put that together. Money didn't work. Barter did. May I encourage you to learn more about barter, just to have some reserves on your shelf. You may want to have some water. You know, because if some kind of solar burp happens and all of this electronic stuff goes away, you understand pumps for your water don't work. You're going to open the tap. There's nothing that comes out. You know, just good to have a few things on hand. Water treated properly can store about 5 years, just to let you know. Food treated properly can store up to 25 years. In the can, you'll see expired. I will eat beyond the expiration because I know that those are false, put in there falsely. 80% of drugs can be used beyond the expiration date, well beyond. It is a designed obsolescence to cause you to buy more quickly. Best buy, it tastes best by this date. That's not an expiration date. That's just when it tastes the best. And by the way, if stuff really hit the fan, I would probably, and there's nothing on the shelves, I'd probably go to Petco or PetSmart and go get me some dog food. Because if the dogs can eat it, it'll stink bad, but I know it's going to be on the shelf. We're talking really bad times. Remember, we're selling people and land to live. Who wins in all this? They all win. They all win. And there was no financial prejudice here at all. Didn't matter how much you earned, you paid the same. Right? Does God know about this? Does he give and take away? I look as it as he was there to cause help. In Matthew 10, 29 through 31. Did I screen that? Thank you. Matthew 10, 29 through 31. Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. How about Psalm 121.3? Do we have that one? Thank you. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Psalm 8 and 4. What is mankind that you are mindful of them? How can you be mindful of it? Human beings that you care for them. Psalm 23 and 1. The Lord is my shepherd. What does it say? I shall not want. Want has to do with need, not desire. Of the practical stuff. Isaiah 49 and 15. Can a woman forget her nursing child and not have compassion on the son of her womb? Surely they may forget, yet I will not forget you. I won't forget you. John 10, 13 through 14. Then the hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known by my own. Psalm 103, 13 and 14. As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. Next slide. For he knows how we are formed, and he remembers that we are dust. Not a bird falls to the ground that the Lord doesn't know about. In the midst of all of this calamity, why are we talking about calamity? Because that's where we are in the Word. Why are we imposing something archaic to contemporary? Because we are at brink. We are at a break point. And we have to be mindful of it, Christian. Can you save the $1 trillion of unfunded liabilities and the debt? No, you can't. You can make a difference in the people that go there, but they don't seem to know how to make a difference because they've not run businesses before, evidently. But they're running the biggest business in the entire world, which is your economy. But what can you do? What you can do is make sure your debt is paid down. What you can do is make sure that your dollar is backed up by something that is stronger. I will tell you, food is currency. In 2000, we knew that it wasn't going to be bad, but we went ahead and bought a 100-pound bag of beans. Why do we do this? We figured, well, we can get water. And if the banking system doesn't work and all the above, we can make beans and rice for ourselves and our neighbors. And by the way, we eat beans anyway. So it was a staple for us. And we keep beans and rice on the shelf because it's protein and carbs, period. And it's inexpensive. A bag of rice is $25. You put it in a Tupperware in a dark place and keep stuff out of it. It'll last for such a long time. And if it's that bad, anything's going to taste good. Because in the Great Depression, they ate wood sticks and bark just to put something in their stomach. It had no nutritional value. How does he take care of us? Physically, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally. Because these are the things that are going to matter most. Physically, he gives us food, water, housing, and transportation. And your transportation may be the feet that you're using. The housing may be a cardboard box or the house that you're in. Or the water that you're drinking could be sucked off the sweat off your cheek or the rain that falls or a big bottle of water that you bought at the grocery store. And obviously food. Emotionally, he listens to us. He speaks through his word. He speaks through prayer. He speaks through situations. He speaks through his people. Spiritually, he feeds our soul and speaks by his Holy Spirit. And his word washes us clean. Relationally, first with him by the power of the Holy Spirit, and then one another. And we get to love in the midst of that. There's more things that he does, but those are just a few things. Because when you're going through trying times, everything is removed from you. You're not worried about car payments at this time. You're worried about stomach payment. You know what a stomach payment is? It's called food. What does he want in return? Surrender. The people surrendered everything they had to Pharaoh. I'm not saying Pharaoh is a god. I know he's Ra. I get that. R-A-A. I know he's Ra, but he is not our God. He is just a human being that was exalted by the Egyptians. Our Father wants us lock. He wants us in the stock, and he wants the barrel that we're on because we're sold to him. We willfully sell ourselves to him. We willfully give over our lives to him. Surrender our lives into trusted hands. And, well, Dave, I'm already a Christian. My heaven is secure. I understand that. But the acts of the Christian need to line up with the commitment of the mouth. Now, I don't see necessarily bad times on us right now. There's a lot of screwy stuff going on because there's the antithesis of God going on in the human culture. But I'm not a guy that likes to say, well, we'll see how it happens and then figure it out. I'm a be prepared kind of guy. I like to be prepared. Yeah, ask my bride. I'm already researching stuff a couple of 3 years down the road for things that we're not even going to acquire yet because I want to make sure that I'm buying the right vehicle that's not going to break down on me at the right price. Why does that matter? I don't know. That's how I'm wired. The lessons that have come into my life come off the heels of my grandmother who lived through the Great Depression. Like things that you probably wouldn't do specifically as we close up here, you coffee aficionados. For me, that coffee pot out there, you know, we have those little Mr. Coffee pots out there. When that next coffee is ready to go, I'd take a level scoop and put it right on top and run the water right back through it. And I would save 60% on every pot of coffee. And you would not be able to tell the difference necessarily. I said, except for the coffee snobs. Where I come from, a cup of coffee is typically at a truck stop. It's not at a fine dining scenario. But I saw my grandmother, and I've told you this story, where she would dip her tea bag in the water and squeeze it out, and then she put it on a spoon and wrap the string around the spoon and squeeze it out and set it in the open window to dry out. And then she would put ice in. She'd have this little aluminum cup, which you shouldn't drink out of, but then they did. And she would drink her tea, and then she would go make another tea. How much savings is that? Say 50%. These are little things you do. You know, when we went through real tough times, and I mean really tough times, you know, I didn't eat. The kids would have food. My grandsons were living with me. My daughter was living with me, with my wife and I. And I wouldn't eat meals because we didn't have enough food coming in. I would eat whatever they left on their plate. And they never knew about it. I didn't tell them probably 4 years later that the bones on the pizza, that's the crust. That went on my plate. Those little half olives or the things you poke off the food you didn't eat, that I necessarily wouldn't eat that went on my plate. You can tell. You know, we can get through everything with Christ who strengthens us. With Christ who strengthens us. There is not one thing that we cannot face, but we don't want to face it alone. Now, I know some of you have had challenging backgrounds. And I know some of you have had financial woe. And I know some of you haven't had any of that. You've had a nice nest along the way. That's just really great. You don't have to learn the lessons of woe. You can learn the lessons of planning and being sure. You know, God spoke to Joseph through Pharaoh's dreams, and he gave Joseph the ability to interpret those dreams twice to seal the deal because he was telling what was going on in advance. Listen when he's talking to you. If you're going through something and you sense that you should be buying not toys and junk, but I mean staples, and you hear him say, you know what, pick up that 10 for $10 cans of beans and get them on your shelf. Then get them on your shelf. Because see, you may not be able to help somebody financially that's gone through a challenging time, but that neighbor that you live next to, when they go through rough times, and they will, and you walk over with your half-cut box of goods that are staples that came off of your shelf that you can come over and just give them. Do you know how far that goes? To being able to pray for them and love them and help them through that bad patch and then point them to Jesus Christ and point them to Jesus Christ. And point them to Jesus Christ. This is why we do what we do. At last piece, I had a friend that ran into some money, and of that money, they set $10,000 aside just for whatever God wanted them to do with it. It had no earmark other than HS, Holy Spirit. Do you understand? Now, you may not have 10 grand set aside just for gifting. And you may, that's great, but you sure can't have a can of beans on the shelf and a bag of rice or multiple little bags of rice put into some type of plastic zipped container that's in a bigger container that can be given over to somebody. Because when you're hungry, you're just hungry. And you can darn sure go help offset a cost of a kid. Maybe they just need 2 months worth of food at the local school. This is simple stuff. We're sending out boxes with the Operation Christmas Child this year. Our hope is that they'll come to know the Lord. Are you getting some of this? Is this residing in you? Please, don't just hear these words, but be doers of them. Because what did Christ say? When you bring water to me in prison, to somebody in prison, you're bringing it to me. When you're bringing a box of food to your neighbor and setting it on their doorstep, you're bringing it to Jesus. When God had told me to take one of these NIV Bibles that some church gave us and we just give out, we use the New King James here, but the NIV is still a solid rendition of the Word of God. And I heard, put this on your neighbor's porch. And 3 days later, because most people go through their garage, I got a message through Facebook, a tearful message of thanks. Because that word is hope. Pharaoh taking over these lands was hope. That seed was hope. Our Father in heaven is hope. Communion's here. Eat well.
Father God, Father, left to our own devices.